Looks great.
Don't give me a complex.
Don't worry. You already have it.
I have so many of them.
There's nothing I can do to give you more of one.
Dragged.
I'm just kidding. I'm just being a bitch.
Yeah, no, it's
Mother
fine.
Of Dragons, Khaleesi. Dragged.
Dragged.
Mother of Dragons.
You know, I never got into Game of Thrones. It's like one of those shows that everyone was like, you would really love this. You should watch
you
it.
You shouldn't.
Blah, blah, blah.
Don't ever
I
watch
mean,
it.
I know, but it's also...
Well, now that we know how it ends. Oh, yes. Are we... we're ready whenever you guys are to start recording. Whenever. Oh, wow. Great. You are? Oh, gosh. Okay. We just dragged Game of Thrones.
I would like to procure the bag.
I want
to
be a rich bitch. Penthouse door man. Money, 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 rich bitch.
Hey.
Give me that bag. Rich bitch.
Yes. You're so rich.
Pay me. All right, so we started it
well.
By being bitches, not just rich, but bitches. Okay, so here's the thing. Game of Thrones is iconic.
Of
it
course.
It was the moment.
Yeah.
It's just the
and it
ending.
Gave us Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal. Anyway,
what an icon.
What an icon and a legend. But I will say, I do feel like the ending did not justify the means.
Of course. And I mean, that's kind of the thing that everyone is saying, and I get that, and I know that there was disappointment, but I'm speaking strictly from an aesthetic point of view.
Sure.
I mean, like, nudity everywhere, but also, hello.
No. Yeah. No, but it's like when you read or watch something, and you become obsessed with these characters, and you've had a 10-year journey with them,
mm-hmm.
and then they all take stupid pills at the last minute and become and become not themselves at all. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
it's
totally.
Like their personalities change, like, it overnight. Like, you were like, wait, you're the smart one, and your idea was to, okay,
great,
right.
cool.
And then it was just expedited too much, like the big baddie. became a big baddie like overnight. Like I was like, wait, he wouldn't do what? And now you're mad and everything's burning? What? You were just, what? That's what the problem
sure.
is.
Well,
it doesn't follow the book.
I will also say that one of my favorite Game of Thrones revelations that people had way later
yeah.
is that the shame scene, the famed shame scene, the person walking next to them is Hannah Waddington.
Who's that?
She was Ted Lasso. She's the tall blonde woman.
That was her.
Yes. And everyone realized it like years later. And it was the moment. It was the moment. And truthfully, I didn't know that Pedro Pascal was in it until recently. Someone was like, he was Game of Thrones.
Character.
I was like, oh, okay, cool.
I mean, he's there for a little bit.
Again, not... I haven't watched it. So anyway,
with that
said, here we are in our summer home studio.
It's our summer home. It's our summer version of their studio.
Not that anyone can tell because it's still curtains and pink and everything else.
It's still pink. Table's a little different.
We're giving plastic chairs. It's all good. Everything's fine.
They're purple.
They are purple.
Can't really tell. But.
Totally match. So Sarah, how have you been a rich bitch?
I'm not stopping myself from... declaring the things that I want unabashedly.
Okay.
Like, I'm not doing that at all. Like, I do find myself making myself smaller, if that's even possible. Physically,
she's so tiny. She's itty,
I'm literally,
itty bitty.
I'm literally Stuart Little, but I'm a woman. But no, I mean, like, when I'll be in spaces and they're just like, girl, I love blah, blah, blah. I see that you're doing this. I see that this is happening. That's awesome. I mean, I don't know if I ever did this, but I used to kind of default and be like, don't be like, thank you. Don't be like, oh, wow, I agree. Or thank you so much. Or da 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 da. You know, we have this instinct in us as a society to be like, oh, compliment, stop. And like, that can't be it. Because don't celebrate me for some dumb bullshit, obviously. And don't be like big headed about it. But like, if somebody says like, Sarah, I really feel like you're killing it, or I'm really happy for you, or proud of that. Don't be like, oh, you know, I'm trying. I'm doing what I can. I have to be, I'm being better at like, thank you. I've worked really hard for that. I really appreciate that. It is a dream come true. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like.
I absolutely know what you mean.
I feel like that's created such a better environment for me to be a rich bitch if I'm exuding that energy unabashedly and not being ashamed of it.
Yeah.
We were just talking about the shame scene.
We were just talking about the shame scene.
Shame. But like also like I don't have it and I don't want to have shame over things that I'm proud of and I don't want to have shame over maybe in the room if someone else feels insecure because of whatever's going down that has nothing to do with me. I used to be like, how can I make myself less whatever so they feel
I feel like a lot of people in the arts are definitely like trained to be this way, yeah. where you do shrink yourself.
Yes, yes.
You know, I know we've talked about this on the podcast before, whereas like a queer person in a space that is predominantly heteronormative.
Yes.
Where you are expected to at least be passable as straight in any particular role. I made a career out of that to the point where like shutdown happened and I was like, I don't know who I am.
So I've been a straight man on camera.
Identity crisis? What? so I think that that's of course like the default that you're going to go to because yeah. it's so ingrained in us.
Yes.
That you have to be quiet. You have to behave. Don't talk back to this person.
Yeah.
Don't say this about that person.
Don't shine.
Don't shine. Fit, especially, and TV is a little different, obviously, but like theater is this way too, where it's like fit into this little box that, trope that we've already created for you. And if you're not, if you're, if you're not that thing that they've created mm-hmm. for you and predetermined for you, then you just don't work.
Right.
And like that's a scary mindset to go into something with.
Yeah.
And only recently do I feel like mm-hmm. that has started to pull back a little.
Right.
Where you can go into a room and you can just be yourself.
Yeah. Yes.
And you have a little bit more artistic freedom or at least personal autonomy over who you are and the character you're creating and
yes.
how you as a human informs that.
Yes.
And of course, I'm sure a lot of like cisgender heteronormative people will hear that and be like, well, of course that's what you do. But that's mm. not how we as LGBTQ people are trained. It's the Butch It Up classes. How many times have I talked about that in season one?
Yeah,
where
season
I had
one.
To
Watch
literally,
season one, everyone.
Where I
Watch
literally
season.
Had to go and take a class to learn how to walk like a straight person, talk like a straight person, and just present as a straight person. I literally spent money to do that. And so, you know, again, the shrinking and the pulling back
yeah.
of who you are and what you bring to the room yeah. is very different for me than it is for you.
Yeah.
Or for any straight
For sure.
presenting person.
Yeah. Have you been a rich bitch lately?
How have I been a rich bitch? Well, I will say, you know, living the desk life where I'm sitting at a desk all day long, love it, super grateful for the job,
sure.
don't want to complain, absolutely happy there.
No.
But sitting there, like, is so hard on your body.
Oh.
Because I'm so used to, like, when I was bartending, I'd be standing up, you'd be bending over the well, you're walking all over the place, when you're bending over something. And
sorry. You set it up. I'm sorry.
But, like, when you're in the service industry, you're constantly moving, you're constantly, like, going from one place to another, carrying stuff around, lifting things up, loading and unloading trucks.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that anymore, which I am grateful to not be doing that anymore. But it is a far cry from sitting at a desk all day long.
Yeah.
And like my hips and my lower back are just so upset with me because prior to that, I was also an athlete. I played sports all through high school.
Yeah.
I moved to the city and I've always belonged to a gym. I may not have always looked like an athlete, but I've always been super
What is
active.
An athlete look like for real though?
The Kelce brothers.
Okay.
But, you know, now that I'm kind of living this 9-to-5 desk life thing, I took time this morning before we even came here to roll my entire body out. I got on the floor of my apartment with a cup of coffee.
Oh, I like
and
this.
And I took my foam roller and I just rolled my entire body. I like stretched my hips.
Mm.
I was doing back bends.
Okay.
I was like, and especially because, you know, this is going to be a theme, everyone. The Zempies is going to be a conversation. So get used to it. If
a
Sarah
Zempic.
Can talk about being a vegan.
I can. I haven't
can
yet today, but I'm happy to do it.
Not yet today, but yeah. if Sarah can talk about
I'm happy
being
to
a
do
vegan,
it.
Then I can talk about the Zempies.
Yeah, you can.
But today,
I allow it.
Even stretching, I could get my knees higher up to my face than I could before. But it's like, it was a nice thing to do that I haven't done in a really long time.
Yeah.
To like, just take a minute for myself. Like we've talked about in previous episodes with like
please take minutes
physical
for
activity, physical activity and meditation and how like those kind of introspective activities that kind of give you the best ideas you have.
They do.
You know, just stretching on the floor this morning. And I was like, la, 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 la. Like nothing going on in my brain. I listened to 3 podcast episodes of other podcasts.
Oh, and of ours? I'm like, damn.
No, not of ours. It was, I've had it in Las Culturistas. My 2 favorites.
Work.
We love. But it was my rich bitch moment of the day where I actually took time to like lay out
mm-hmm.
and stretch the shit out because it needs it. Even now, sitting here, my hips are still tight after like 2 hours of that this morning.
I get it.
It's crazy.
Well, so you chose yourself and I chose me too.
I chose
That's
myself.
Rich bitch
let's
behavior.
Always choose us. Now let's talk about,
yeah.
we kind of already teased this a little bit
yeah.
with the Game of Thrones of it all.
Yeah.
This is not going to be us dragging television shows
no,
for the
time.
Whole episode. We don't have time for that.
No.
But I do want to ask you, like, what are you watching right now?
Oh God.
What is in your streamers queue?
Fuck. When I feel like I need to put something in the background and just feel really good about myself, Love Is Blind is
oh no.
Is the one. And so I love watching it because I do. And also because there is a boo-boo kitty. I can't remember his name, but he has this YouTube channel called Psychology in Seattle, and he watches them too and then breaks down the psychosis of it all. And I'm almost watching it just to see him react, because there'll be a moment where it's obviously something is very wrong here. And then he'll come on and be like, okay, so this is what's going on in this scene. And I'm like, wow, it's like dissecting relationships. It's dissecting childhood trauma.
But wait, is it the season that he's on?
He's not on it. He watches it on YouTube and he reacts and goes, and he pauses it and he goes, okay, so this conflict just came because she has avoidant attachment and he has da 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 da. And you can see that this is, and it's, I'm learning so much about interpersonal. I really am learning so much. Yeah. Like, what is borderline personality? What is da 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 da? How does that manifest? What is histrionic? What is, and it's really interesting. So when watching Love Is Blind, I'm actually watching it now to see the psychosis of it all and learn from, like, oh, I have friends maybe that have something like this. I have family that maybe have dealt with something like this, or even myself when I'm like, why do I feel sometimes triggered by certain moments? And it's not like a psychosis or anything, but it's like, he'll point out like, this must have happened in someone's childhood in this argument because this is coming out. And I'm like, this is very interesting. I love that. That's what I'm watching. Great.
I can't do reality TV.
No, I can't, other than this.
I really like, the only one I think we talked about this last season was Naked Attraction from the BBC.
Oh, right.
Where, like, you just reveal parts of the body and as the screen goes
See, that
up,
sounds so gutted. That
it's so gutted.
It's like how Love Is Blind is so gutted to me.
But,
it's like dead.
Love Is Blind is like Mr. Rogers compared to Naked Attraction, for real. Because, first of all, there's just, like, peen everywhere.
Wow.
Peen everywhere, okay. Which is... admittedly why I watch it.
Yeah, we know why you watch it. No one's confused by that.
It's a free show.
It's a free show.
But it's atrocious. And I watched every season.
Right.
It's crack. And I understand why reality TV is successful, because it is like watching this crazy, insane window into like these creepy people's lives. And humans by nature are curious storytellers, and we like want to observe. And so of course putting a camera in someone's home is going to light, or like into this weird sphere of their life, is going to attract an audience.
And hot take, I really think they need a union.
I agree.
Because,
and I believe they
some
are
people get mad about it because they're like, what? They're obviously signing up for blah, blah. Right, but they're still human beings on a set, and they're not given enough water. They're plied with alcohol. They're completely, you know, give them a union.
They
so they
are
at least
unionizing.
Have, I know they're trying. I don't know if it's been successful yet.
Yeah, there has been, I think about fact check me. I think there's about 100,000 people who have been on reality TV shows over the last 20 years that are getting each other together to make this happen.
Yes, I know. I've been to their website. I don't think it's happened yet, though. But it's cool that they're trying.
Yeah.
And I would love for SAG-AFTRA, I'm just putting this out there, to work with them, because it is still celluloid medium. And it's still on camera. It does fit within our purview. I know it's not like talent, quote unquote, but it kind of is to like be
it
that
totally
open
is.
In front of cameras. Yeah. I find that to be. So my hot take, and a lot of people don't agree with this, is I just think for the human element of it all, to have them like have safer sets, it's still set practice, is get them some unionized stuff. It doesn't have to be the same as SAG-AFTRA, but I feel like they need to have some sort of union to protect
any
them.
Any kind of protection.
Yeah, because it's the Wild West. They're not treated properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I am rewatching Fellow Travelers because I'm obsessed with it, and so I just cannot get enough. I truly believe, and I've said this to you before, that this is one of the greatest pieces of queer media that we have ever seen in the history of television, film, or otherwise.
Great.
It is so beautifully written. It doesn't beat the whole AIDS storyline to death, pun intended.
Yikes.
But it handles it so beautifully and so gently that I didn't even really notice it, because the crux of the story is survival.
Right.
And
which is just human.
It's just human. And I'm so obsessed with it. And I want to tie this into the fact that like this year's cycle of Golden Globes, SAG Awards, Emmys, Oscars.
Yeah.
All were super like LGBTQ
truly
friendly and represented.
Yeah.
Where like we have shows like Fellow Travelers, yeah, or we have people like Ayo Edebiri, yes, who, from The Bear, who are all winning their first.
Yeah.
Niecy Nash Betts.
Yeah.
She won her first Emmy.
She's
a lesbian.
Monica, the trans, what's her name? I follow her on everything. Gosh dang it. But she's fantastic. She's fantastic. She was in, he's canceled, but she was in that, that trans, the one about the parent coming out as trans, and he...
Oh, Transparent.
Transparent, that's it. The Transparent.
I love
the one
that show.
Yeah, she was the trans woman in it, who's just a...
Yeah.
A gorgeous...
She's been on Broadway.
She's amazing.
Love her.
Trace Lissette, there's it.
Yes.
Anyway, she did Monica, which was fantastic, and I'm mad that that didn't get the publicity it should have, because it had star quality, it has all the things, and that should have gotten more. So like you're saying, there's these touches of so much queer representation, but it's still not...
Right, but we've gone beyond touches, though. Like,
yes.
What I would like to point out is, like, back in the early aughts and the late 1990s... kill me for even saying that.
Yeah, ew.
You know, when I was a preteen and a teenager, and I was just starting to become aware...
Yeah.
Of pop culture and the world around me. And obviously, like, I knew that I was a queer person from the second I had consciousness. There was no representation. The representation was Will and Grace. Ellen getting canceled.
Oh, right.
Everyone's dying of AIDS. I remember recently that woman who was a guest on Oprah's show when she was, like, 4 years old and had AIDS.
Yes.
And talked about it openly. She just passed away this past year.
Damn.
Or I guess this year. And I remember that as, like, a literal child. And so to me, that was the representation, and it was fearful and it was scary.
It's all fear.
And also growing up in the church, like, you're nothing. You're an abomination. Go to hell. You're done.
Yeah. We love
so,
you, but.
So we grew up, I grew up with that. And so not having any kind of positive representation in media or at all, think of where I could be right now if I did have that. So the youth of today, I'm so excited for them that they're
me
getting
too.
This. Because just to name a few,
mm-hmm.
RuPaul has his 14th Emmy
Jeez,
win.
Juggernaut.
Elton John got his EGOT status. We love
Great.
Niecy Nash Betts, whom we have mentioned, got her first Emmy for Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. Ayo Edebiri gets her first for The Bear.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much. And unfortunately, my show that we're talking about here, Fellow Travelers, not my show, but you know.
But you love it so much,
and
you want it to be yours.
It's mine.
You want it to be yours.
You know, unfortunately, that didn't win as many things, but it is just.
It needs to.
I remember sitting there watching the first couple episodes and just being so in awe of not only the performances, but the writing and the handling of subject matters within the McCarthy era, which we don't see a lot of in television or film.
Yeah.
So that was absolutely incredible. To watch. It was my favorite thing of this year.
You're so rich.
Please welcome our next rich bitch, Erin Neufer.
Yes, squad.
Welcome,
Erin,
to I Want to Be a Rich Bitch. We're so happy to have you here.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Before we dive into it, we are going to ask you what we ask ourselves and each other and everyone else who comes onto this podcast.
Your social security number.
Your social security number.
No, we don't ask.
How have you been a rich bitch lately?
How have I been a rich bitch lately?
Yeah.
Yes. I just commissioned a jewelry designer to take my grandmother's old rings that were like, you know, she's Southern. She's like a woman of country music. She had all of these gaudy, huge rings that I couldn't wear in public. now I have all new jewelry. Representing
wow.
Like yeah and
she's bejeweled
they're and
gorgeous.
They're so pretty, and it was like one of my first sort of like adultish jewelry purchases.
Yeah.
Like I spent a pretty penny on it, but I'm really happy and it's going to be with me forever, and I'm thrilled.
When it's sentimental, it means something.
Precisely.
That's such a move.
That's such a rich bitch
such
move.
A rich bitch move.
Tanks.
We love that.
Yeah. Anything that holistically uplifts you spiritually, energy-wise, anything that makes you feel like rooted in family and who you are. And it sounds like she was a baddie, so I'm glad
she
you have
was.
Her jewelry.
So in reading your submission form to us when we sent it to you, you have lived everywhere. Like specifically, I want to talk about the Japan years, but also, is there anything from like the moving from Indiana to Japan back to Indiana to New York trajectory that really sticks out to you? Like if we talk about like Erin moving around as a kid, what is the thing that's like, oh, I remember this thing?
Well, I moved to the States 2 months before 9/11.
What an answer.
Yeah. I grew up overseas in Tokyo in a time when Tokyo was in an economic boom. It was one of the most exciting places on earth to live.
It is.
There was, and it continues to be. It's an amazing, amazing country and an amazing city. Yeah, you've been there.
Yeah, I went in high school. I lived over there for just a short while with a host family. And we went to, in Kuki City in Saitama, but we also went to Tokyo and it was mind-blowing and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I grew up with tons and tons of art around me. Like, fashion was so interesting. Like, there was this really interesting, like, counterculture movement happening there. And so I experienced that, and then I moved to Indianapolis. And I didn't tell anybody. I stopped telling people that I grew up in Japan. And it wasn't until I was, like, 19 years old that somebody I was dating was like, "Why are you such a weirdo?" And I said, "I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up in Japan." And they were like, "What? You grew up in Japan? That explains so much about who you are." And I mean, I didn't know, but, like, you know, I have a lot of Japanese mannerisms because I was raised in
formative
the city.
Years.
Yeah, makes formative sense. Years. Right.
Childhood.
Right.
Forms you.
Right. And so there were so many things about who I was that that I kind of had to grow into appreciating, and that journey would take me well into my 20s.
Yeah.
So that and really, like, I didn't fully start accepting until a couple of years ago.
Well, and I think that's one of my favorite parts about New York City too, is that it's full of people like that who have, like, what you said, a shine that's stuck out like a sore thumb everywhere else. But when you come to the city, it's like, oh, thank God, somewhere where I fit in and I can, like, kind of disappear if I want to, and then also be the biggest star I could possibly be if I want to.
Right.
Yes. And you have the decision and the choice and the resources and the access to do that.
Yeah.
Where you wouldn't have that somewhere else.
Yeah, it's a city that kind of attracts misfits and it's such a beautiful thing. That's exactly what I felt when I moved to New York. I wanted to get out of the Midwest basically as soon as I could.
Say no more.
Relatable content.
Like, honestly, like some really wonderful people there. And the city of Indianapolis has really grown, and it's really become a much more accepting and, like, less homogenous city. Mm-hmm. But I needed to get out, and I just needed to be in a place where I could fly my freak flag. Like, yeah. It's just, like, for people who, you're right, have that, like, little shine, have that little mischief. Mm-hmm. Being in a place where you're seen for that, where people celebrate it, but you can also turn it off so you can, like, rest. Yeah. It's such a gift that this city gives us.
Yeah.
Yeah. The city's wild. So it's like, it can be anything and you can be anything. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. You can be exactly who you are here. This is why we're always like, you know, as much as we complain about what's going on in the country, it's like, where are we going to go? Because this is the city. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing about New York, too, is that if you decide that that's not who you want to be anymore, you can completely change it.
Switch it up.
And no one is going to bat an eyelash.
No.
Yeah, because it's still you. It's just who you want to be.
Different and or better version of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think that, like, particularly the artistic community here is interested in authenticity, is interested in people, you know, You have to prove yourself. It's.
I love that, though.
Me too. Yeah. I'm all about that. Yeah. And, like, so it doesn't suffer fools.
Yes.
But you can show up and you can, like, have your, like, weird little, like, hobo bag of tricks, and you're just like, I don't know, is this going to work? And you will find a community of people here who are like, yes, it does work. Yeah. We love it. We want more of it.
Right. Come over here.
Yeah.
Come over here.
Be weird with us.
Yeah. Little pockets of weird.
So from the time that you moved to the city to where you're at now with fellow travelers. Obviously, we didn't really specify this, but Erin plays Mary on Fellow Travelers, one of my favorite television shows of all time right now.
So bad.
I've already fangirled. Don't need to do it.
I finally watched it. Sorry, I was a bad friend earlier when we met, and I was like, I haven't seen it yet. I'm sorry. But I finally watched it. It's fantastic work.
Thanks.
But between getting here and that, let's use that as a marker.
Okay.
Like, what was that whole roller coaster like? Like, where, how did, like to not,
like,
to not make this too specific, like, what was survival like? Like, what kind of weird odd jobs did you have to kind of carry you through? Were they all art centered? Were they more service industry centered? Like, a lot of actors gravitate towards. What did you do to get through the day, the week, the month?
Pass the time.
The year?
My God.
To stay creative in your being and keep going.
Let's hear them.
Everything. I was a customer service agent. Mm. I was a waitress. I managed a restaurant. Wow. I did art care therapy for a nursing home. I was a babysitter.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I did everything except do any kind of salesman job because I hate that shit.
Oof. Don't even get me started.
Yuck.
Don't even get me started.
I hate
oh my God.
It, it is, that is like makes my skin crawl. Yep. I did everything. And throughout that process, you know, I had an agent, I had a manager, I was booking some random jobs. Then I got married. And then through a very
relatable content again.
Was a very good person who had demons and that unfortunately was a kind of dark period. And
we met during that period.
That's right, we did.
I was just going through mine as well.
That's right. Yeah.
And we were both like, but what I didn't love was our mutual friends like, oh yeah, they're getting divorced too. I'm like, hi, I never met this person yet. Can we?
You guys are alike. You should talk.
You both had the same thing happen to you. Here, talk.
And like, the funny thing is like when you're going through, divorce is so hard.
Yes.
It's so difficult.
It's so crazy.
And so it's just like, I feel like when people get divorced, it's like this like shell shock that you're just like sitting there being like, hi. Tough stuff, huh? All right. Keep doing you.
Yeah, like where were you stationed at? Like we just got back from a war. Like I was in the trenches in Normandy. And you're like, I was down the road at da-da-da.
I was in the trenches of the New York court system.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Trying to figure out like 15 documents later how to get the thing.
But I love that we met them, but I love that we both said, and I don't know, maybe this is just my rosy tinted glass version later, but we both were like, do you feel like a weight's been lifted? And we were both like, yes, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt like we were doing the right thing.
Well, I think it was...
No, it's no shade, but...
No, no. I mean, honestly, like, the situations that led to that, the whole thing was really outside of anybody's control. Like,
exactly.
It couldn't work anymore. And... I think that there is something that happens when this happens in a divorce or this happens with like huge rock bottom moments where you're just like, oh, right. I'm never, ever, ever going to put myself in that position in those circumstances ever again. And with that, it's like the only person I had was myself holding my hand and pulling myself up and being like, we can't let this eat us and consume us.
No.
This, we have to like rise above. And there is something really beautiful about that. And I got so lucky that a couple months after we decided to actually divorce, I got my Broadway debut. And so I had that to like...
It's always
connected. I'm telling you right now.
It's like the stop in a tub. You pull it out and like everything just goes the way it's supposed to.
My show got on Amazon 4 months after I got divorced. Do you know what I mean?
It
was years of like, please go on. And then it was like, bye. And then, oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, it kind of like everything sort of coalesces to be able to kind of almost midwife you into this next
get
chapter
you back
of your
on
life.
Track. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so... From that, I did that show.
It was called Ink.
It was called
by
Ink.
James Graham, where you played Anna Murdoch.
I did. An astrologer.
You played a couple different parts. I saw that. But Anna Murdoch was the one that stuck out because the whole story of this whole play is that it is the dawn and the birth of the news cycle as we know it. Mm-hmm. And then you, of course, got to play the wife of the head honcho.
Of Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, yeah.
Who we met. Yeah.
Crazy.
Okay. So did that. And that was an incredible experience. They are the people who the director and the writer are going to be doing the Tammy Faye musical.
Which they just announced casting for.
I'm thrilled.
I can't. It's Andrew Reynolds and who's the woman?
I don't know, but Andrew Reynolds is a great, great choice.
Yeah, I love him so much. I literally just saw this today. It's fresh in my mind. I can't think of it. I'm so sorry. So it's not fresh in my mind is what I meant to say.
Whoever it is, I'm thrilled. I am so here for a Tammy Faye musical. And it's Rupert and James coming together again.
That's amazing.
So did Ink. Wonderful experience.
I'm sure.
And then was on unemployment Yep. For a little while.
We love her.
We love it. Some unemployment. And then the pandemic hit. During that time, I started doing like little clowning shorts on YouTube. And
oh my God, I need to look these up.
I have watched so many of them. I love them.
That was a really like very important thing for me. And just finding like my artistic voice and all that sort of stuff. And through that, I mean, then I did Julia, and Julia came through.
We're going to talk about that.
And then second season of Julia was shot at the same time as Just Fellow Travelers. So 2022 was a big year of working.
Oh my God, you were busy.
I was all over the place.
Freaking blast.
But it was, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the journey. Really, it was like, it was a journey of self-worth, I think. It was a journey of understanding that I didn't have to put up with mean people, abusive people. I didn't have to people please nearly as much as I thought I was going to have to.
We just talked about that too. We literally just talked about that.
But also, again, like that unplugging and letting the drain clear.
Yeah.
I think the pandemic and shutdown and everything was a lot of that for a lot of people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know for me specifically it was. For you it was.
Hell yeah.
Obviously for you it was too, because that whole situation begot you work.
Right.
That put you in a place of worthiness.
Yeah.
Or at least feeling it in a more tangible way.
Yeah.
And it's earned. And it's also like, it's kind of a rite of passage as an artist. It's almost like we take what we have been through. We take all these experiences and we are open then to learning. It's like stripping you down. I love that you brought that up, that the program was like that. And then just kind of building yourself back up, even after it trains you to be able to build yourself back up as well when things happen in your personal life. And I love that you were talking about not dealing with like mean people or judgmental and just letting yourself be the artist you're supposed to be. That's so important. And that's such rich bitch behavior. And we really appreciate that you brought that up.
Thanks.
Well, and also having a good support system too. I mean, you talked about like finding your people at the NYU grad program, finding people specifically and in general in New York City where you just have your hobo bag of tricks and it brings the right people in. One thing I did want to ask you that we kind of talked about when we first met was being on set for Fellow Travelers, like the entire cast was all queer people. And I really want to know, because I've never had this experience. I've had quite the opposite experience, actually. How different is it being in that kind of work environment where every single person that you're working with is a queer person versus the opposite, where like maybe you have one or two others, maybe there's zero. Like, what was that dynamic like?
It gave the work that we were doing every day a sense of urgency, but also clarity.
Okay.
Everybody that was working on it didn't have to, nobody was putting something like another thing on them to be able to translate an experience. It just was the experience that everybody had. And everybody, I think, I'll speak for myself, but also I was hearing this from other people. There was such a weight that was lifted off of just being like, this is simply a story I understand, and it's a story I want to tell. It's my story, but it's also my community's story. And it just felt like it was so well cared for. Those stories were so nuanced and so well cared for. And every single person, you could just sense how much it meant to them to be able to tell a story like this. And I do think it also lent an energy of excellence to that. People wanted it to be the best possible representation of that project that it could be, because we don't get that experience. We don't get that out there very often. You don't get there's very, very little queer stories told by queer people out there.
Yeah. Well, and especially we were talking about this before you came in. We were talking about you. about how, yes, there is very little. And the ones that we do have are mostly, if not all, addiction or AIDS centered. And it's all centered in like promiscuity and like being sexually active or sexually deviant
and fear.
You don't, and hiding. And even though a lot of Fellow Travelers, if not all of it, was about hiding, it more so was about surviving. And again, the community around you that you need to just get through the day. And I think that's one thing that we now as a community don't necessarily need anymore in the same way, because there's a lot of communication interconnectivity where, like, if something's wrong, you can text somebody. If you're in a bad spot, you know where to go. There's like flags and signs places that you can, there's centers you can go to.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the McCarthy era where there was a literal witch hunt for everyone, you know, Lavender Scare, that's what Fellow Travelers is about if you haven't watched it. It just was such, I think watching it, the first thing I thought was, I don't think I've ever seen a piece of television or film that was placed in this era at the specific time when this is happening. And if there has been, it has not been told like this.
It is such a fascinating period of time in history. So I'm like a big old history buff.
Girls, same.
And I read everything I could. We were given this phenomenal packet by the production team before we started pre-production. And it was a bunch of films that that were queer-centric films. Or films that had kind of the tone that they were after, but then also all of these books. And there was this incredible book about the Lavender Scare and about that time period. So during the 40s, when the when America was kind of reconstructing and there was the New Deal, all of these people flocked to DC, but the job, because the jobs were there, were proliferating. But the jobs were not like suitable for what a man, like a middle-aged or middle-class man thought that he was suitable for. So those jobs all went to young men or to young women. And it became, in the 30s and 40s, one of the most easy places to be gay in America. There were tons and tons of gay people able to hold hands out in the street, able to express themselves. The men were literally called fairies in the office, but it was like an affectionate term.
Mm-hmm.
The women didn't have to get married because they were making their own salaries.
Wow.
And so a lot of these women were finding financial independence. They didn't have to get married to men. So the women were all like, I'm making my own money and I'm not even all that into men.
I don't need you.
And the lesbian community was booming.
Good.
It was a really gay place. And then with McCarthy and with the Lavender Scare, he was trying to find people just to take him seriously. And he couldn't immediately do that with communism. So what he did was, he was like, what's something that turns people's stomachs? Oh, being gay. Wow. And he demonized the gay population that was clearly in existence there. And of course, everybody had to go into hiding. But like places like the Cozy Corner absolutely existed. There were tons of gay bars there. And so anyway, that period really went from this, from a very accepting time, to suddenly just like in a matter of a couple of months, it became dangerous for your life to be gay.
Yeah. And in a lot of places in the world, it still is.
Oh, absolutely.
God, but I do think that this is something that I've talked about, maybe not before on the podcast, but I've talked about it in life with other people. You know, we get together, we have drinks, we talk about things. Yeah. About how pre-World War II, and even shortly thereafter, like you're saying, there was an influx of acceptance of queer people. There, like, I think there's a Cole Porter song that was like top of the charts that talks about men dressing as women and women dressing as men. And like, and like, okay, cool.
Drag was huge. Eisenhower did drag.
I know.
I know. But like, also, there's also, and I will deter everyone from listening to season one again by telling you to listen to Mob Queens, which is another podcast that is set in the same period of time, about the woman who was married to the head of the mob, who was actually a lesbian and ended up running one of the most successful drag bars in the East Village. And then at the end, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but in the end, you find out who it is, and all of us know who it is. by either directly or proxy, and my mind was blown. And I wish that they would do a season
repeat the
two.
Name of that for the audience.
Mob Queens.
Mob Queens, I have to see it.
Unbelievable. But there was all kinds of acceptance. And then all of a sudden, post-World War II and shortly thereafter, the American PR machine came along and was like, nope. Husband, wife, picket fence, 2.5 children, and the man works and the woman's in the kitchen.
The 50s was such a weird, destructive
weird time.
Gutted. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It is, and I'm so glad you said destructive, because that's the period of time that people point to when they're like, oh, America was the best at this time. Like economically speaking, sure, because we were taxing wealthy people appropriately.
Right.
And we had social systems, and education was free up until the 60s.
Yeah.
And so that period of time was really the downfall of America, even though we love to talk about how it was the best point.
Yeah.
It was the best time for straight white men. That's about it.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that every time?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely wasn't a good time for if I was alive or if anybody.
Unless you were a lesbian working in D.C.
Oh, in the 30s.
In the 30s.
Not in the 50s, Bibi. Yeah, this is not good. No. Regardless, I would not have a good time.
I don't remember. Yeah, I said Eisenhower. I'm not sure if it's Eisenhower or Hoover, but like one of our presidents absolutely dressed in drag.
Probably both.
There's rumors of a lot of the presidents being gay. Abraham Lincoln being on top of the charts for that. You know, and we're never going to know, because the social contract was just to not
erasure.
Talk about it.
Erasure.
And erasure.
Yeah. It is a very terrifying moment that is echoing the 50s right now.
Yes.
Because
I was just about to say that.
Just it's
just
that.
Like people are the conservative, the fear. I'll say the fear that with the same exact fear. I mean, if you tell people, we know who your enemy is, you need to fear them. They are corrupting your youth. They are corrupting your children.
Oh my God.
They are, and then you bring in religion with it.
Ugh.
Then suddenly it's like,
you can't argue it.
You can't argue with God.
No.
Apparently.
I saw something really interesting today. I almost said I read an article. I didn't. I saw a TikTok. That's what I mean when I said I read an article. It's because I saw it on TikTok. I'm not reading.
Congress
I'm not
is
reading.
Doing this because of him.
No, right. I'm not reading. I'm watching TikTok. But it was saying how when people think that they get their rights from God and not the government.
Yeah.
You run into a slew of social problems, which is, again, like you're saying, a mirror back to that era of where we are now.
It's so funny that, like, it's always the others, attack the others, so don't look at us, don't look at how we can improve things, I don't know, by maybe mental health reform or gun control or any of the other things that are actually killing people, but let's talk about how scary the gays are in those books. And it's like, guys, we read books. When I was little, I read so many fucked up books that were about straight people doing terrible shit. Like, why is that okay? Which I'm fine with. I think reading is mind opening.
Yeah.
That's important for me to read it. We're all about Shakespeare, which I am. Let me just be clear. But like Romeo and Juliet is about two teens who like commit suicide, and we're cool with that. But like not those gays.
Well,
get them out of here.
Don't get me started on the Bible with the genocide and the incest and the rape.
Yeah,
and
let's
like,
go.
Let's not ban that book.
I know.
Okay.
It's so interesting.
To lighten things up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and also because of time, because we could literally talk about this
forever. I could go on forever. But I do want to ask you about Julia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You played, oh my God, I'm going to have to look at my notes, Marion Morash.
Yes.
Ooh.
Who is a cookbook author.
Love an alliteration.
What was that like prep for you? Like obviously doing the work, getting character, well, you got a packet for Fellow Travelers. Did they like send you cookbooks and recipes before any of this? Like how did that go?
No, but my character did write a cookbook.
Yes.
Right.
That a incredibly sweet first AD while we were on set was like, I'm gonna just hang out for a second. And he comes back and he has the hard cover. He found it at a flea market.
Oh my God.
It was such a sweet moment.
That's an amazing
moment. I was so thrilled. I loved that crew. They were such wonderful. I mean,
collaborative crew.
I have only worked with incredible crews.
That's
and
so
and
lucky.
Really incredible creative. Like I feel so lucky with the people I've gotten to work with. Everybody superlatively is just incredible across the board. Cast, crew. Anyway, so for Marion, I like to work on all of my characters in slightly different ways. Like Mary was somebody who I knew I could get into through history, because it was such a rich, fecund kind of like environment to like dig into. With Marion, I kind of wanted to get into it with my senses, because she is a cook and she was a product of the 60s in that she was a housewife and she But she was like a Mary Tyler Moore housewife, you know. She wore her culottes.
She threw her head up in the air and just stayed.
She did. Like Dick Van Dyke, like was like the first woman wearing pants in her neighborhood. I did love that aspect of her, and that was that kind of collaboration with the costumer,
Catherine Hepburn of it all.
Yeah, the Catherine Hepburn of it all. And I kind of thought of her as like a little like potted plant that like it could just exist in your like little potted plant, right? The one's right here. But it could exist like on a, like a windowsill and it could be healthy, or you could put it in a garden and it could grow and like take over your yard and like give you tons and tons of fruits and vegetables. And probably not one plant, but you know, multiple things. We're talking metaphors here, y'all.
Pollination, photosynthesis, all those good things.
So that was kind of like my, so Mary Tyler Moore, a houseplant. Her cookbook, and weirdly, early Rolling Stones. I was listening to the Rolling Stones, like early Rolling Stones.
Okay.
So like when they were like kind of still like the Beatles.
Yeah.
Yes, they
This is like the soup. And so I would be like in my trailer listening to like early Rolling Stones. Yeah. I had watched a Dick Van Dyke episode the night before. That's how I always prepped. And and then I just like, kind of got into my senses, like into food. We had an incredible chef on our show.
Amazing.
You could go into her like her little like mad scientist lab of cooking and you could just eat whatever she was prepping for the day, and you could I learned a lot. I learned tons about cooking on that show.
That really
Were you a cook before that show? Are you a cook now? Like, do you have a different relationship with food and cooking now after that?
I think, I mean, I grew up in a cooking family. My brother is a phenomenal cook. And my mother was an incredible cook. My dad's like, he's like a grill guy. He's, you know.
My dad's a grill guy too.
A little bit like Big Green Egg.
Not the Big Green Egg, but like it looks like an airplane.
Yeah, right.
He's got the pellet one. Then he likes charcoal. It goes through phases. He's like, I like this one. It's a vibe.
It's a lifestyle. It's an absolute. It's a lifestyle. Well, certainly the egg. They have like clubs. Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
Oh no.
And my dad is cute. He's entrenched. It is incredibly cute.
I think it's great because it's like it's like not toxic masculinity. It's like we're making food together. We're talking about food. We're gathering.
Holistic masculinity.
Yeah, I love it so much.
This is what we want more. More holistic.
I love my dad and his buddies. I love them.
Yeah. So my dad's the same way, but So we all did cook, but there was something about being on a show that was about like about appreciating the senses that did kind of like change my life a little bit. Like it did make me more thoughtful about the kinds of food I eat.
Right.
Good quality foods. Mm-hmm. Nourishment does not have to mean like bad tasting. Like it's like in all different ways. Like really, and like also having a sensor, having a sensual relationship with your life can be, can make everyday life so pleasurable. Like talk about a rich bitch mindset. Like, like rich bitch, like sitting, like being able to feel like nice fabric or like a nice perfume, you know, like that's the everyday life.
Random question. Do you have ASMR? Do you have that?
I don't have ASMR. I have like, I think the opposite of that. I hear ASMR and I want to kill.
So I have ASMR.
You do.
So I've always been a very sensual person. I didn't really understand why like my teacher touching something, I'd go into a trance, or like if they were drawing with like something on the chalkboard, not the scary, but like the, I'd just be like, oh, fuck yeah, bro. And like, I don't know. And so with food, like with my diet, I don't want to go into it. Cause I'm like,
you know, guys, Sarah's
a
vegan.
I'm a vegan. I hate you all. Just kidding. Again, but like,
we got it in. Our goal is to get it into every episode.
So sorry,
that
guys.
Sarah's a vegan.
I don't care about what anything, I don't care about what anyone else does. Let me be clear. I've said this on the podcast before, but that dietary thing really kind of tuned in with like things I was eating. I was feeling more and like things that I really get that.
Yeah.
But it started with like my audio and visual feelings, which is why I like certain things.
I'm jealous of people who have ASMR because it sounds awesome.
My brain tingles like a freaking, oh, it's awesome.
I don't, I'm somewhere in between where I don't care, but I hear it and it irritates me.
Well, that makes sense.
So I'm probably more on your
side
of this.
But I have to tell you guys, you're really missing out, because when you hear the things, your whole brain just, it gets warm and floods with like tingles and it's so pleasurable. It's beyond.
I can do that. I can do that with bourbon.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Microdosing shrooms.
Yes.
This is how we will do
that. It's correct. More along that line.
Right.
It's more along that line.
Okay. Yeah. I've not experienced,
THC.
So I can't.
It's
say.
More along the edible, the indica.
And you get it naturally.
Yes.
I'm like MK Ultra. Like I literally, like if somebody like, if somebody's like going to tap a microphone and like whisper something, I am going to.
Oh, you're a sleeper cell. Okay. You're going to kill us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, all right, well, we're speaking, running, we're getting close to time.
Of,
so let's.
Speaking of the appreciation of food.
Yes. Yeah. Here we go. This is fun.
I would like to play a game with you. Ooh. Sarah and I are going to play a game with you called Toss It or Table It.
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to give you a food, and if you would try it, you're going to table it. If you are like abso-fucking-lutely not, you're going to toss it, okay?
Fascinating. Okay. Yeah.
So we're going to start you out real strong. Okay. Sarah?
Okay, coming from Cambodia, and he made this list, so I'm reading it now. I'm like, dear God. Cambodia, crispy tarantulas.
Oh, table it.
Oh.
You would try it.
Absolutely.
I love that you're adventurous like this. Okay. Anytime I go to a restaurant.
I'm already feeling better about this.
Every time I go to a restaurant and there's something on it, on the menu that's like kind of off the wall, that's what I'm ordering.
Yeah.
And I have to say, before I entered the vegania of it all, I was a 20-something living my life and I did eat all sorts of crazy shit. And I do like that.
I think, I mean, I have a problem with
it. It's not crazy to people. It's crazy to us as Americans.
Right. I have ethical issues. Like that's like where my like distaste
sourced.
Goes. But if you're like, if you're going to give me like a cricket or you're going to be like, this is, you know, I don't know, some, you can give me some crazy stuff. I'm always going to try it.
Yeah. I've eaten gator. Oh,
great. Well then this list
crickets.
Is going to, this list makes me feel better. Cause some of these are, some of these I searched far and wide for.
I mean, really tried. Yeah. He really gave
okay,
it.
Okay. So from Iceland, we are we tossing or tabling harkel, which is fermented shark meat?
Okay, that I'm probably gonna toss.
Okay.
Mostly because shark fin soup, I think, I is like a thing and like can be poisonous.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
I don't know if
we'll fact check that because I don't actually know.
I think it is. But I would feel a little freaked out of the like my brain would start telling me a story that I was going to die.
I understand.
Eating shark.
Cool. So we're not going to do that.
Not doing that.
So next up, we have Italy.
Okay.
Toss it or table it. Casu Marzu, which is a traditional Sardinian sheep milk cheese that contains live insect larvae.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Probably. I would probably try it.
Wow.
I don't know if I would. The living thing is, I can't get past
that. Oh, it's living.
Yeah. Live insect larvae.
Oh no, probably then no. Okay, sorry. Okay. I just heard insects and I was like, I eat an insect.
Cool.
But I will not eat a living insect. Thing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
You can hear it screaming.
Yeah, I know you feel it.
Oh, I don't know if the larvae would. I'm,
no, but you
know
you're doing it.
You don't know.
I mean,
that's
true.
You might bite down and hear
frequency.
Like a little like
yeah, that's right.
It's fair. But to be fair, plants do scream.
I know, don't tell me. I heard that. I
know,
hate
I'm
that
sorry.
So much.
Okay, sorry to all the vegans in the room.
Like, I'm trying my best.
We're just going to
what am I going
to
do? What, I eat air? I'm going to die.
Yes. Haven't you heard of that sunshine diet?
The sunshine diet.
Yeah, what do I freaking
Okay, next from South Korea, silkworm larvae.
Are they dead?
I have no idea. It didn't say.
I actually think that they are dead, and I think I have had them before. Right?
Amazing.
They,
I love
they
that.
They taste like, they're like little crunchy, like chips.
I have two USA ones. We have ones here. And
this is perfect for you because you're from the South.
And I've eaten both of these.
Oh.
So for USA, toss it or table it, southern fried rattlesnake.
Oh, honey, I will eat that.
Me too.
I'll try it.
Me too.
I've had gator, so I feel
me
like
too.
it's adjacent
oh,
to
rattlesnakes,
that sort of.
It don't taste nothing like, I mean, it's like chicken, right?
Yeah, it's totally like it's long chicken.
That's,
yeah.
That's what we're
another
go
USA one that I wanted to just say that we don't have on here, but I brought up when we were looking at this, Rocky Mountain oysters. Do you know what those are?
Oh, yeah, bull testicles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're goat, depending on where you are.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I if somebody were to pay me, let's see. If
is there money involved? That's really a great
we
point.
We are dragging this game out.
Yeah. Yes, $25.
Yes.
Okay.
I would table
cool.
it.
Cool. I've
per
eaten them.
Testicle
they're pretty
or
not that
in
great,
general.
But
per testicle. I'm okay. Gonna do $25 per testicle.
50 a pair. Okay.
50 a pair. We love it. That. All right. Okay. So, from Mexico, we have escamoles, which is Mexican caviar or insect caviar, is the edible larvae of purple ants.
And pupae of ants.
No, that's a typo. It should
oh,
say
it is?
Purple.
Oh.
I think. I don't know.
A pupae is an aspect of their growth, so I thought
sure.
that made sense.
Whatever.
I thought you did the right
ant
thing.
Eggs.
Ant eggs.
Ant eggs.
Yeah, I would. I mean, depending on how they make it, I table it.
Okay,
cool.
Great.
You're really open to this.
And our last one, which it was a learning thing for me because I've heard this before, but I didn't actually know what it was made of until I read this. Then I was like, oh, Eskimo ice cream, which is made of whipped.
Sounds
like a sex act. It's like a rusty trombone.
It does. It does. It absolutely does.
Here's that Alaskan ice cream.
I'll do it.
It is made of whipped fat or tallow and meat mixed with berries, wild sweeteners such as roots or Indian potato, wild carrot mixed and whipped with a whisk. It may also include tundra greens.
That all sounds like something you would spend $74 for in the West Village.
Yes, and also it takes 700 years to make.
No kidding. Well, that's why it's so expensive.
Yeah,
expensive.
Right. Makes sense.
I'm actually gonna toss this because I don't like fat. I don't like whippy, creamy things.
Okay.
So it's
okay.
it's not the concept.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like. Just like I don't
it's
like
it's a texture thing.
It's a texture thing.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah.
That's totally fair. Well, wow. that has been Toss It or Table.
Toss It or Table. You actually said
Aaron
yes
Neufer.
To way more than I thought. I was very scared.
Truly.
I'm
no.
a very adventurous eater.
But I love that about you. I think Thanks. Everyone should be because like you said, it is like sensory experiences and like what mm-hmm. a rich bitch move to just eat things.
I yeah. also think like adventure is you people hear adventure and they're like me on an airplane going to a you know,
whatever.
Right.
Antarctica.
Yeah.
But adventure is can be so many different things.
Yeah.
You can have an afternoon of like a global adventure by going to Queens.
Right.
Facts.
It is we live in such a cool place, but and we also have access to the internet, so it's like also adventures of like the mind, like being able to go research yeah. things and like spelunking
right.
in the world of history and science.
Get
and
out of your comfort zone for like
absolutely.
A couple of minutes. Yeah. That's an adventure.
Take some shrooms, go to Queens.
Yeah, go. That's
take
it.
Some shrooms and go to Queens.
Go to Queens.
Episode
Be
title.
A queen while
episode
you're doing
title.
It.
Take some shrooms and go to Queens.
Well, Aaron, this has been fabulous.
This
we
has been fantastic.
Made you way over time, and I'm so sorry, but that's what happens when we love you. Where can the folks find you?
The only place you can find me is on Instagram.
Love that answer.
Yeah. My handle is at Aaron Neufer Desu or Des.
Yeah.
If okay. you speak Japanese.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I am.
It's entrenched.
Dozo yoroshiku.
Yoroshiku onegai shimasu.
Yeah. Good times. Well, thank you for joining us. You've been an absolute delight.
Absolute delight.
We're Thanks, so please. Happy to have you. We were so,
so
psyched
happy.
About this one.
We've been talking about this for days.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to be here, and I hope everybody watches Fellow Travelers.
Do it.
The world's best people worked on that show, and it deserves all of the love
Agreed.
And all of the success.
And so does Aaron Neufer. And
yes.
we hope that we have you back on our show.
Thanks, babies.
Sometime in the near future.
For sure.
I hope so, too.
Thank you, guys. And for watching I Wanna Be a Rich Bitch, put the money on the table.
And that's a cut.
Cut! Sorry to yell that in the mic.